Hello, and welcome to the CredoCast. I'm John Doherty, the founder and CEO of digital marketing marketplace Credo, where I connect you with the best digital marketing agencies and consultants available online. I started Credo at the beginning of 2013 because I saw a need. Large companies with big budgets have an easy time finding a great agency, but I saw that small businesses had an incredibly hard time. There are many misleading messages about what it takes to grow your business online these days, and small businesses have been hurt by bad agencies before. I've even seen it happen to my own friends. This podcast series digs into the beginning stories of Credo pros and other select entrepreneurs in the digital marketing space. Whether you're just starting a business or you've been in business for years, these stories are meant to encourage, energize, and inspire you to take the next step in your career, whatever that is. So sit back, listen, and enjoy the conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to the CredoCast. This is episode 5. I'm very excited today to have with me Mike Ramsey, who is the founder of Nifty Marketing, based up in Burley, Idaho, different from Boise, Idaho. Apparently, Idaho has a thing with B names for their towns and cities. So Mike is the founder of Nifty Marketing. I've known him for a while, and we recently connected by email, and his agency is on Credo as well. And so I'm super excited to talk to him about Nifty. So Mike, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, a little bit about Nifty?
All right. Well, hey, thanks, John, for having me. To start out, I'll go through and give you a little bit of the history of how it came to be, how Nifty came to be. So I was in the business management program at BYU Idaho in Rexburg. Which is this super small town that has quite a large university, about 15, 17,000 people. And the town has way less people than the university beyond the students. So I was going to school there and studying business. And there was one class that was really intriguing to me. It was called Business 250. And the point of the class was to start an online business and have to sell something during the semester. And my teacher was Kent Lundeen for this class, who had had a little bit of online experience before this. And so anyhow, I started thinking about like what I could source in the community that would be, you know, easy for me to basically sell online. And the most obvious thing, of course, being from a small farmland area and especially around Rexburg, was really big Idaho potatoes. They grow like the large russets that are called, they're called 40 count potatoes, which means that there's basically 40 potatoes in a 50 pound box, meaning every potato is over a pound. So basically I started selling Idaho potatoes online. I had to become a potato broker to do it. And I just was learning through doing that. And, you know, I built a website from a template, just an HTML template. I had to add a cart for checkout. And I used like a Google shopping cart to do that. And, you know, I was driving traffic with like 3 to 5 cents clicks on AdWords due to the fact that nobody else was advertising on anything related to potatoes. So from there, it did well for the class, and a few people around that community had heard that I was doing something online. And back then, 2008, in southern, you know, rural Idaho, not many people were doing things, and so it led to a few referrals. So I started picking up work, and then it went to, me wanting to create an agency. And so I did so, and I looked for names, and I remember it was so funny. I was thinking about different names I could do, and I like thought of the name Duct Tape Marketing and was like, ooh, I love that. It's like small businessy. And I went and looked it up, and another John already owned it and had like a really big brand on Duct Tape Marketing. And so then I was thinking of other things that were, you know, kind of like small business and a little old school. And my grandpa used to always say the word, that's nifty. And so that's how Nifty Marketing was born. Now we have Nifty Marketing and Nifty Law, 25 full-time employees between Burley and Boise, Idaho. We just recently got featured on the Inc. 5000 for you know, one of the fastest growing companies in America. And it's just been a wild ride.
That's fantastic. Congratulations on the Inc. 5000. That's definitely something that I ascribe to someday, but sounds like you put in a lot of hard work to get there. So before we talk about a little bit more about the story of Nifty and some of the lessons that you've learned, what is a potato broker?
That is a great question. So in order to sell any Idaho potatoes, you have to go through what's called the Idaho Potato Commission and become licensed to even use the word Idaho potato. It's a registered trademark. And so this commission, you know, they really control that brand. And so I had to go through all of this thing and pitch them the idea. And they're like, really, you want to sell potatoes online? And I was like, yeah, it's for a college project. And so they let me go through. So it consisted of basically convincing the Idaho Potato Commission to allow me brokerage, paying a fee, getting the training, learning how to use the trademark, everything like that. And so they even let me buy the domain, which I still own and still have the most ugly website up on that is no longer functioning as a sales site, but I keep it just because it's like funny and it reminds me of where I came from. And that's hugeidahopotato.com.
Wow. So today I also learned that there's an Idaho Potato Commission, only in Idaho. That's fantastic. And everyone should go to that site. I know I'm going to go check it out. And it's always fun to see where people have come from. My first sites were built on Joomla back in the day. I think I took all of them offline, but it's always great to go back and kind of remember where we came from. So respect to you for having that up there to keep you humble, I guess.
Oh yeah, and it is very, very humbling. We're talking like downloadable HTML template where I took an image that was already existing in the theme of a lady that had, she was like petting a dog's snout, and I photoshopped the dog out and put a potato in her hand. I mean, it's bad. Like,
I love it. Do you have neon fonts as well?
What was that? Neon fonts? No. There may back in the day have been some text that was the same color as the background, and that I'm not sure if that's still there or not. So
yes, fantastic. Well, any SEOs listening, go and do an inspect element and see if you can find Mike's hidden text on his Idaho Potatoes website. So moving on a little bit, it sounds like you got your start through this online class, through this college course, which 2008, that's super forward looking, I have to say. That's really, really cool. And at a school up in Idaho, that's absolutely fantastic. And then you said you got your first leads, your first like consulting leads through people just hearing that you were doing something there. Were these referrals? How did those people hear about you? And how did you start off consulting? Because it sounds like you haven't ever really worked for someone else. You've basically just done your own thing since you graduated.
Yep. So yeah, that's exactly right. All of the leads that I originally came that originally came through to me were via referrals through friends, family. I really tried to drum up my own business like the first few months by doing cold calls. I mean, I sat in this little apartment room. My wife is a registered nurse and she was working nights when I started. And she was also pregnant with our first child. So I was cold calling businesses in Southern Idaho, and that was just not going anywhere. You know, I had a few appointments set up, but it didn't result in any business. But what happened was just because, you know, a friend knew that I was doing web, they would talk to a business owner, family member, or somebody that they knew about how they should be going online. And I got brought in, and initially it meant that I was just basically saying yes to whatever came through at very low prices. And I totally had no idea exactly what to do. Like most of the situations I was just figuring out as I went along. And I think that was key in learning and progressing, especially given the fact I hadn't worked for an agency. I just had to dive in and realize that if I didn't know how to do something, I could research it and figure it out. And that's exactly what happened. And so it started through organic growth like that, and then just continued to grow from there.
So was there ever a point as you were figuring out, you were learning marketing, you're figuring out how to manage clients, how to get new business, all of those sorts of things. Was there ever a point where you weren't sure that it was going to work and you were considering going back and getting a job, you know, working for someone else?
Yeah, actually, when I had first started, I had left a really good position. I had been doing door-to-door sales through all of college, and I had been promoted to end up being the chief marketing officer of a pest control company that was, you know, growing fairly rapidly. And, you know, from a financial perspective, it was very, very rewarding. And I made a lot of money through college. And I was, if I would have stuck with that career leaving college, it would have been substantial, you know, definitely, you know, six figures and even above, like mid six figures, if it would have continued to grow the way that I was hoping and the, in all expectations it could have. And so leaving that was very difficult. And I remember my first year, I just thought, I need to make $50,000 of revenue. You know, if I can do that, this is like viable. And right when I started, I didn't have very much work. And a dear friend of mine that was the drama teacher at my old high school was diagnosed with a pretty severe cancer and needed to take a break from teaching. And he asked me to substitute for his classes for like 3 or 4 months. And so due to the fact I didn't have very much work, I opted to do that as well when I first started, which made growth even more difficult because my time was divided in Nifty and that substitute teaching, making like nothing, you know, I think it was like $8 or $9 an hour. But I, doing that, I was like, man, did I make the right choice? You know, not sticking with that career, or I mean, I love teaching as well. And I was thinking, or do I go this different route? But, you know, over that time, I still maintained a continued growth. And we did end up hitting that goal, which meant that, you know, I was good to keep going. And it was a very, very hard first few years. You know, it was definitely school of hard knocks and just learning the right way to move forward.
Gotcha. And that's fantastic to hear that, you know, it's not always easy, right? When you're first getting started, often the first, you know, couple of months or a couple of years can be kind of touch and go. And a lot of us, you know, you have, especially consulting, you have very, you know, thick months where you're making a lot, and then, you know, maybe those contracts end, and then you have some thinner months and you're kind of figuring out and thinking through yourself, through your own psychology, trying to figure out like, okay, do I really have this, you know, am I really cut out for this, right? But then over time, you learn how to manage cash flow and, you know, you save for the lean times that you know are going to come and all of those sorts of things. So, and then also it's easy to get distracted saying, okay, I'm doing this, but I'm also, you know, going to take this thing that I know will at least give me some money. And so balancing those short-term versus long-term. And as you said, it often, when you take, you know, for you as a substitute teaching job, or, you know, I've done some things as well that, you know, the last year running my own business that looking back, I'm like, probably wasn't worth the money, wasn't worth the, you know, the time doing it, but, you know, you live and you learn. So at what point did you say, all right, I'm forming a business, officially, and I'm gonna look to grow it? How far in was that?
You know, when it came to like setting up and structuring the business and creating an LLC, that was fairly immediate. And I have to credit my college for that, because during that web class, we had to go through that process as well. So they taught us how to register a business, the process that we had to go through to form an LLC plus potentially get a business license from the city or something. And it's very minor in Idaho, so it wasn't that big of a deal. So that was like out of the gate. I did end up changing years later from an LLC to an S corp, which then became a lot more work legally, just because the company was a lot bigger. But you know, we did that out of the gate. But when I knew that it was going to work and that I was going all in and that there was a big future in this, It was kind of interesting. There's a couple stories that could go with it. And so I'll start with one and maybe go back to the other one. So the real time that I knew was I was trying to really come down and figure out like what my specialty in the industry would be. And a few experiences led to me just really diving into local search, largely due to the clients I was working with. And I reached out to David Mim because I had been learning quite a bit in local search. And I noticed that like David Mim and Mike Blumenthal and some of these other people were writing a lot about it as well. And it was before local was really like big and mainstream. And I started, you know, communicating there. And he sent me a list of people to basically follow their blogs, talk with. And watching them, I started doing likewise, blogging, sharing things that I found, and just really networking and developing a good friendship. And it just seemed like out of nowhere from doing that, leads started pouring in. And you know, I think that my game really went up, my focus really went up. And so it just put me in the right place with the right audience where all of a sudden, you know, more and more things were happening. And so, you know, that really changed things. I really, really started growing very quickly at that point. And that was like about a year and a half, 2 years into starting before we had that good focus and you know, started becoming and developing our identity. And I also knew at that point that it would definitely grow because I couldn't literally handle it all on my own. And so, you know, thank goodness for Odesk. I was way too nervous about taking on employees, you know, in Idaho and the legalities and the different things around that right out of the gate. And so, you know, we used freelancers for the first, you know, 6 months to a year before I brought on my first like Idahoan hire. And, it was just, it just saved me. I don't know if I could have done it without that initial step, just because it took doing that to know and to figure out processes and to learn how to communicate to somebody. And then I just loved it even more having them actually in house with me. So that was that process. But I, you know, going back to something that I think is really important for all entrepreneurs, and it's very different for each person individually, you know, so you can take my story, and it's definitely not going to be the same as everybody's, but you know, choosing to leave that pest control company and come to and start Nifty, it was actually a very, very spiritual thing that happened to me. And I try not to talk too much about the spiritual side, you know, my spiritual side in the business setting, but when it comes to entrepreneurism, it's what gave me the confidence to know that like I could do it regardless and that it would work out and that I was willing to take those risks, even though we were moving, my wife was pregnant with a baby. You know, I was leaving steady income and all of these different things. And it was just basically, an experience I had where I'm not going to call it a vision, but you know, in my mind, I saw what the future could hold and it was very clear and it was definitely in Burley. And like, I knew that I could do it. And because of that, I just kept pushing even when times really felt like certain things were going against me during that first part of, you know, the first year and a half, 2 years. But, you know, I knew that it would grow. I knew that someday there would be staff. And so I just went with it and it worked out. And I get that that's not going to be the same for everybody, but that's definitely what helped me individually.
That's awesome. So would you say that you've always had like an entrepreneurial bent then? Cause I totally understand the, you know, the vision for what, you know, something could become and what something will become, and definitely a fan of, you know, setting big goals and looking forward, you know, 5 years and then kind of taking the steps, you know, to get there. And it will probably turn out that you'll get there, you know, a couple of years faster than you planned on. But I'm always interested talking to fellow entrepreneurs about, did you always think that you're going to be an entrepreneur, or, you know, did you just kind of fall into it?
You know, I actually didn't. And I didn't even think about it really being an entrepreneur, like through all of junior high, high school, et cetera. I wanted to be an actor, to be honest. Like I grew up in theater. That's what I did through a lot of high school. I did competition. I did a lot of speech events and I loved it, you know, and that was like my aspiration and goal. It wasn't, this is so random, but I went to England as a missionary. And on the, like the way we do it is we go for a couple years and at the end of it, you know, you leave and there's always this fresh group of people coming and going. And right as I was leaving, and this was in England, I found like all of these old missionary clothes that like were good for England, like coats and ties and different things. 'Cause American ties really suck for the most part. And I made this like, it was called Ramsey's Let's Make a Deal Shop. And so I set it up at the place where all the missionaries were coming and going and started selling it. And like everybody started joking that I was going to be an entrepreneur and that I was going to like start all these businesses or something just from that. And that was like that little spark that said, oh, actually, yeah, that would be cool. And I came home. And right when I started college, I decided that I wanted to go and do sales, you know, summer sales and do door-to-door sales because it's just really, really good experience on learning how to talk with people and how to sell just instantly over and over and over and over. And so doing that gave me like the business confidence beyond that, that it would take. And I decided to, you know, in between some of those times, I started doing window washing and just yard work and going door to door and asking. And so all of that added up to really show me that I did have that really strong entrepreneurial spirit where I liked being in control of what I made. Like I hated working for an hourly wage. I always did. It drove me crazy because I didn't see any motivation in working harder in that hour than less, you know, simply because it would be paid, I would be paid the same. And my family had, my grandpa started a heating and electric business. And so like I worked there growing up in my junior high years and it was very difficult work. It was very hard, but I just wasn't very motivated to learn it or be good because I was so limited by hourly wage. As soon as I first went out and did my own work, you know, coming up with something, selling it, realizing that you could make more in time, you know, with smarts and good ideas or with sales than you could with just an hourly rate that was very minimal, was this huge, like, eye-opening, motivating experience for me. And so, yeah, from that point, I would definitely say I was hit with, like, an entrepreneurial spirit. And it's continued to be a gift, a burden, and a plague all at the same time for me throughout the last 10, 15 years.
I totally get that. And I agree with you on the American ties are terrible and British ties are pretty amazing thing. You know, it's funny as you were saying that, I'm reminded of most entrepreneurs that I've talked with. You know, a lot of us don't necessarily have like, oh, you know, those stories of, yeah, I bought, you know, school supplies at a discount in middle school and then resold them and made money and then got in trouble. You know, but most entrepreneurs I'm finding are self-starters, right? We're self-motivated and, you know, motivated by doing better work, learning new things, all of those sorts of things. When I was in college, I actually, one summer, I was staying at home, living at home in Virginia with my parents and finished up my school year at university and didn't have a job and basically like finished up Friday, moved home. And then Monday, I just went out in my car and went around to all these small businesses and just like asked who was hiring and ended up actually getting hired by the brother of my parents' next door neighbor. I just stopped in and they knew who I was and they gave me a job as a painter for that, a painter's assistant for that summer. So literally Friday, I finished school, moved home that afternoon. And then Monday, I had a job for the summer, but I was like, you know what? I can't sit home. I can't be idle. I'm going to go and I'm going to find a job.
Yeah.
And I've heard that time and time again. You go out and you make it happen. And that's the entrepreneurial spirit right there.
Yep. I completely agree with you. And I had many experiences like that where it was just, if I was going to earn money, especially during college, it was just making it happen. Whether it was door-to-door sales, window washing, etc. Those were all situations where if I didn't work, I didn't get money. And if I didn't sell, I didn't get money. And the more I could figure that out, then the more it would result in. And I had friends, it was really interesting because all my friends sold with me, especially in the pest control side of things. We'd have like 8 or 9 of us go out every summer and sell in these different locations. And it was really interesting to see how we could all put in the same amount of time, but come out with something so different. And that's when I really saw those who had the entrepreneurial spirit versus those that didn't and didn't have that drive. It just became very, very apparent. And those that didn't really have done well in careers, but they like the consistency of, you know, of a salary or of, you know, a certain set of tasks compared to getting up and making it happen with no guarantee every day.
Totally. I've absolutely seen that as well. And there is something to that consistency. But we'll come back to that, in just a minute. So one more question I have for you before we get to the final question is, looking back over your years of experience now, I mean, you've been doing your own thing with Nifty for like eight-ish years. What would you have done differently now, looking back?
You know, that's a great question. And I've
kind of, I'm sure there are a bunch, but give us the top ones.
I would say that one of my biggest regrets was not interning at different businesses during college. I would have loved, and I should have done it. I should have gone and worked in a marketing department for a company and worked for somebody beforehand. I think that would have served a lot of use as I came into this industry, and I had great sales experience, great door to door. But I'd never worked at an agency. You know, I'd never seen how an agency was set up. I never saw the different, departments or different job descriptions or these different things that like really took me a long time to wrap my head around, because even back then, like there was no information. There was really nobody focusing on training agencies or putting together information or anything like that. And so I feel like that really did cost me about 2 years of time. From when I started Nifty, that I could have probably saved in a 3 month to 6 month internship somewhere else. So that's my biggest one. The other things that I think I would have done better is just initially pushed for higher quality, and not been afraid of cost so much. I mean, I was so petrified of spending too much, you know, and like not being profitable from the get-go, that I think it held us back in quality until we became big enough that we could either hire that really good contractor or hire that really good employee, because I was just really scared about spending too much money. And that's something that's taken time, but it's also taken a lot of savings to get me there. And it's probably because I don't have a huge I don't take massive financial risks. I really am I'm quite conservative in cash flow and different things. But yet again, in a tech space, those are things that can actually be a risk at moving potentially a little too slow in your industry, or not having quite as good of a product you would have had. And while it's worked out, these are just things that slowed us down. Trying to think anything beyond that. There's a ton of little things. I wrote a piece, I think it was back in like 2013, on the Moz blog about starting an agency. And it just basically went through all these things that I'd learned through hard experiences. And there's quite a few on there that still hold true today. The other thing is just appreciating employees and really like seeing the value that they bring and making sure that you are aware of it and that you're complimentary towards that. And I don't think that's been like, it's not something that I would consider myself amazing at, and it's not something that I would consider myself really bad at, but it is something that I think every entrepreneur that starts their own business needs to constantly be reminded on and just constantly tweaking to really show their appreciation, because you know, while you might be the one that started the business, the building of a business is done by a team. And I look at the growth that we've had, and it's something that I might have kickstarted in the beginning, but it's taken a lot of gas along the way, and that gas has not just been my own; it's been from a lot of wonderful people.
Absolutely, and I'll find that blog post and link to it in the blog post for this podcast. I actually remember reading that, and I think that was one of the first times that I really like read stuff that you had written, because I haven't done much local SEO myself, and you know, not super involved in that world. I remember that post actually. It was fantastic. And that's another, you mentioned something that a lot of other people say that I think is really important to highlight, is, you know, hiring good people and retaining them and showing them that you appreciate them and appreciate their work. And, you know, and that's really how you grow a business. And you even did that at MozCon on your, just recently with your presentation. You showed, I mean, you talked about stuff that other people at your agency have done, you know, and really gave them all the credit. And I really respect that.
Well, thank you.
So the last question that I have for you that I love to ask everyone, and I'm gonna have to change a little bit for you since you kind of came out of the gates working for yourself. But at this point, you know, knowing everything that you know, what would it take to get you to go work for someone else?
Oh, you know, I really don't think that I could. There's no amount of money that could be offered. The one thing, there's probably one area where it's a little bit appealing, and that's just in a place where you can learn at an accelerated rate because you're working with somebody who knows, you know, substantially more. And I've been really interested in the private equity investing world as of late, and I have some friends in that space. And I've talked to them a lot, and we share notes back and forth and different things. And really what I came to the conclusion of is like, hey, instead of going to work for somebody, I would partner with them on something, you know, but I don't think there's anything or any amount of money that somebody could pay me to just be an employee again that would be appealing enough. It would just be that I would do a partnership on something new. And that probably goes to one of the last points that I think is very important for an entrepreneur is, you know, when it comes to the financial side, some people are motivated by that. It's got to be part of everybody's motivation. Like if anybody says, well, it's not about the money, like it is to a certain extent. Like if it wasn't about the money, nobody would work and we would just pursue learning in other avenues, like being a forever student at a university. So there's always a financial tie to the things we do. There always has to be an economic engine. And what I've came to find is that money matters up to a certain living lifestyle that you choose. And then everything beyond then, it just doesn't matter. It truly, truly doesn't matter. And that's where the other reasons have to be big, or you will, you know, either burn out or you won't be able to push forward and innovate because you just won't have the motivation if your motivation is all monetary. So you know, don't just go into a field like this, or don't just start just based on the monetary side. There has to be other bigger reasons, but yet there does have to be a certain pull to that monetization side to make it worth your time and to, you know, achieve that level of finances that you need for the lifestyle that you want. And now I would say I've achieved that. You know, I'm past that point for myself, and that's why I think like it would be really hard to go and work for somebody else, is because that motivation might be there if you wanted more money. But the only thing that draws me to something like that is actual institutional knowledge, and you don't have to work for somebody to gain that. You can do other, you can get it other ways.
Totally. I've heard that I read somewhere that the kind of the general rule of thumb is any raises you get up to, like working for someone else or even working for yourself, any compensation, upgrades that you get up to about $75,000 feels life changing. And above that, it doesn't really change, you know, anything. Like your happiness is not materially more. Of course, this depends on, you know, if you live somewhere cheap, you know, that number might be 50. If you live in San Francisco, it might be, you know, six figures.
Yeah.
but there is like, there's a certain point where it, you know, it doesn't add anything more to you. And I think it's also important, like as an entrepreneur, as you said, to kind of set that mark and say, okay, in order to keep living the lifestyle that I want to live, I need to hit this, right? When I started a year ago doing my own thing, I said, okay, I need to hit this point and this, like this level of income in order to be comfortable in San Francisco. Right. And so that's obviously a higher number than other places, but, you know, but then you work to make that happen. And then after that, you know, basically it's all, you know, it's all extra. And, you know, and depending on how you want to build your business, kind of business you want to build, do you want employees, do you want, you know, a business that just runs itself, et cetera, then you can figure out, okay, do I, you know, where do I reinvest this money, or, you know, do I just take it as a bonus for myself, or whatever. So I think those are very wise words there.
Well, yeah, thanks. And I do think, you know, in the agency space in particular, it is a lifestyle space. You know, we're not building products that are super easily sold. And sure, agencies can get acquired, but most of the time it's like an acqui-hire. And so, you know, being in this space, I think a lot of us have already made a decision towards lifestyle compared to, you know, other things that some big SaaS startups try to push for. And so, you know, realizing that has also been very freeing, because it means that while I do want growth, I don't have to be down on myself for not hitting crazy numbers like maybe potentially a SaaS service like Moz or something is trying to achieve. And I can still feel really good about what I'm doing, my lifestyle, and the choices we've made going into this industry. So yeah, no, I think it's just solid words from you, and very true on, you know, those, just the ideas around why you're starting up and what your goals with that are.
Totally. And I think those are wise words about, you know, you're building the business that you want to build. And the agency space is not all about, you know, scale and build it and flip it and, you know, and all of that. And, so many entrepreneurs I talk to in the digital marketing space are, you know, we live where we want to live, right? And we build the business that we want to build, and, you know, we're not trying to hit these crazy numbers because some investor wants us to hit it, but we're actually able to, you know, grow as we want to grow as we're able to grow, you know, make those tough decisions that businesses that are, you know, have taken on institutional funding and those sorts of things just are not able to do. Yep. So much respect there.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us here on the CreatoCast. I've loved learning a little bit more about you and your background and Nifty. So where can anyone who's listening find you on the internet? Where are you writing? If they want to know more about Nifty Marketing, and, you know, maybe they're a small business looking for help, you know, taking over their local, you know, city or town or whatever, where can they find you?
I'd say best place is just by email at mike@niftymarketing.com. Both of our websites, niftymarketing.com and Nifty Law. And I'm pretty active on Twitter as well, at Mike Ramsey. Places where I don't do as well at looking is LinkedIn, and the messages that come through there, largely because it's became like it's like spam box in email most of the time. And so I don't spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, and Facebook's another place to hit me up. If you can find the right Mike Ramsey, there's about 500 of us in the United States. So yeah.
Cool. Well, you heard it here first. niftymarketing.com, at Mike Ramsey on Twitter, or shoot him an email, mike@niftymarketing.com. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, John.
All right, Mike. Take care.
Yep. Bye.